I think the most important part is go out there and don't sell features. If you're looking, typically a lot of founders, this is a mistake, not one of the top mistakes, but if you're going out there and selling features and like, look at how cool this is and doing a demo and trying to sell that way, it will work. You'll get some clients, but you're not going to become a big company. You're not going to get a lot of traction that way. The thing that will get you the traction and get you these people to pay before you even have a product is the problem you're solving.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, man, we're going to have a good discussion today, especially for those that are in that stage of founding an organization and starting to transition into growth, because that's a very critical time for people to look at some of the things that they need to do differently and open up their mind to new possibilities. And Adam Springer's on the show today, who's going to help us to do that, to help with that transition. Adam, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so we're going to talk about common mistakes that founders make in regards to their sales and marketing. And while we do talk about the B2B digital marketing, I mean, really it's about pulling together sales and marketing in order to be able to grow your business. And yes, of course, we do talk about existing clients and feeding that back into the cycle, because that's critically important. But before we get into our discussion, if you could share a little bit about your background with the B2B DM gang so they can get to know you a little bit better.
Sure. So I've been the first salesperson for four different startups, going from zero product launch, basically zero to a million in under a year, typically around 9 months, and then scaling that out to 5-10 million, depending on the company. One of them is a unicorn. One of them's halfway to unicorn. Another one was really good, but one failure. But you learn from those two.
Absolutely. So now when you say unicorn, from your perspective, define what unicorn really means.
Over $1 billion evaluation, and they went IPO.
Gotcha. Okay. So now when we start talking about that valuation component, I would dare to say a lot of the companies that you're working with, they're dealing with reoccurring types of revenues in order to get those types of valuations. Is that correct?
Yeah, typically reoccurring revenues. Some of them will have like one-off jobs, but it's not, it's typically SaaS or kind of a product with a MRR.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So now when you start talking about, talking about being that first salesperson, you see a lot of these mistakes, that founders, are making, or maybe even getting ready to make, or, have these certain beliefs and experiences that's going to, allow them to do that growth transition. So I'm looking forward to us, really digging deeper into that so that people can get a different perspective, like we had talked about. Okay. So if you look at some of the common things especially when you're that first salesperson that you bumped into and then working with clients that you bump into, what are some of the things that come to mind?
Ooh, that's a loaded question and a good question. I think, I've worked with hundreds of founders at this stage now, and probably there's a good race for the top three or so, but I would say that one of the biggest ones is not starting. If you're not going to start sales, you think, okay, well, I need to first get the website up, or I first need to get the product up, product to a certain stage. You could actually sell the idea of the product. And if people are willing to pay, you've got a golden idea. So not starting, I would say, is number one.
Well, okay. So that's a really interesting point, because when we think about that, a lot of people are like, well, what do I show them? What do they see? And, you mentioned something about, getting sales before all of that is in place. Well, we've even heard situations where people have received funding without having anything in place, right? So it's like, do that, right? So what are some of the keys in order to be able to, keep from allowing that to be a barrier for you?
I think the most important part is go out there and don't sell features. If you're looking, you know, typically a lot of founders, this is a mistake, not one of the top mistakes, but if you're going out there and selling features and like, look at how cool this is and doing a demo and trying to sell that way, that's, it will work. You'll get some clients, but you're not going to become a big company. You're not going to get a lot of traction that way. The thing that will get you the traction and get you these people to pay before you even have a product is the problem you're solving. So if you go and you focus on that problem and you focus on solving that problem for these people, then they're going to be really excited. And so how you do that is to go out there and just ask a lot of questions and be a good active listener. So if you go out there, you meet with your prospects and say, hey, how are you managing to do this today? Oh, okay. And what does that cause you? Oh, it takes you 10 hours to do this every time you have a new client. What does that mean for you? How does that affect your business? Just start diving into that, you know, like peeling the onion, take away layer by layer, get down deep to the root of the issue, and then say, okay, if I could solve this for you, would that be helpful? What would that mean for your company? Well, if I would save you those 10 hours and make it only a half an hour for each client you onboard, what would that mean for the company? What would that allow you to do? Now you've got them excited. What you do is less important than, or sorry, how you do it is less important than like the problem that you're solving.
Okay. So oftentimes when you start looking at problems to solve for and having that particular focus, many people get stuck in a symptom. So, which is maybe two stages or two steps or away from the root problem. So I would dare to say that I have to take that into consideration when I'm talking about solving somebody's problem and really focus in on what their top of mind is, knowing that, hey, I need to go two steps prior to that in order to really fix that symptom. Would that be a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I think before we started recording, you and I were just talking about a tool to take podcast recordings and cut it up automatically into different pieces so that we could share it on social media and stuff. Now, that's a really cool feature, and that alone sounds really nice. But what is the problem that you're solving? Is, wow, for you and I to cut up these podcasts, to take that time to do the editing, to find the right quotes to go, that takes hours of work. And that is just not doable for guys like us. We've got a lot of other things that are going on that are a lot more, bring a lot more value for our time. So that's the problem that kind of tool solves. So if we focus on that, that's where you're really going to get the traction.
That's a good example. So while it does have the features and benefits that you're talking about, it's really that, hey, and you and I were talking about, well, we used one particular tool that really just focused in on being able to do that on the audio portion of a podcast. But it's like, hey, we do video podcasts. So, we need to have both.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, now I see, because I'm still having to take and create snippets and things like that from the video. In addition to, the audio components. And now I could just eliminate that from my responsibility. I don't know if I had shared with you, but, I have two podcasts that I actually do. And I was doing two weekly podcasts, and I was just barely keeping up with being able to do all of the interviews and all of the bookings and all of that. And I was, 80 plus hours a week. And I mean, for me, when you come to me and say, hey, I can cut out, a lot of your time that you're essentially expending, upon all of that activity, that was significant, and that would be significant. Okay. So, and I know you said that wasn't part of your, the top three that bubbled up when you start, referring to that. But so we've talked about just getting started. That being a top element, in regards to finding your way to success. What would be one of your next ones?
I would say a lot of founders would try to say, okay, well, if I'm going to get started, let's just hire somebody to do it. And first of all, if you haven't done it yourself, yet as one of the founders. Sometimes you're a technical founder. Sometimes you're not. You don't need to be a good salesperson. You could do it yourself. But this is the second problem is trying to hire somebody to do it when you haven't done it yet yourself. And there's many reasons for this. But I think two of the most important things is, one, when you do it yourself, you get to know your customers. And when you get to know your customers, that will help you improve the product so that you could, you know, you keep closing that loop and moving faster and faster, because now you're improving the product to solve the problem better. And you're tied one-on-one with the customers, and you have that relationship, and you get to know what their pain and what their problem is.
Now, you bring up something that I've heard from a couple different, you know, sources of people who are kind of, you know, tops in performance. And I think that's critically important, because a lot of people essentially are tops in, let's just say, popularity. It doesn't mean that they're tops in performance.
Yeah.
He was saying how the number one responsibility and the number one value in regards to sales is really not making the sale. It's about gaining market intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It goes back to what I was saying before. The more you know about the problem that you're solving, the better you could solve that problem. And that's that market intelligence aspect. And if you're going to hire somebody to do that for you, most salespeople are not good at delivering that message and conveying that message, that taking what they learn from the prospect and giving it to the product team or the rest of the company. They're not good at that. They don't know how to decipher that. They're looking just to close. So that's one of the reasons why it's really important that you're doing the first initial sales. The second reason would be because a lot of salespeople will come and just, it's not that they're evil or trying to be bad. It's just that they don't know better. It's very hard to be the first salesperson. And it's a very unique talent. And so when you get somebody that's not really ready for that or doesn't know how to do it, they're going to come and tell you, okay, the leads are garbage. Well, it's not the leads. Or it's because we don't have a proper demo. We don't need to have the right slide deck. They're going to come up with all these excuses, and you don't have any choice but to listen to them, because you don't know yourself, because you haven't gone out there and done it. And so you could have a salesperson who, with all good intentions, they're just sitting there on their butt all day, waiting because they don't know what to do. Or let's just say this is kind of tied to the third mistake. So maybe we'll roll into that, but you could get a really good salesperson. Let's say you get the top salesperson from Salesforce. You know, they've been performing there for the last 10 years. They've been number one each year. They will fail at your company 99% of the time, because their experience is with a different kind of sales process, with a different stage. They're coming in from, you know, think about this yourself. If you get a call from somebody says, hey, this is Adam from Google, you're not hanging up, you're listening. But if you say, this is Adam from XYZ company, you're like, you're already about to hang up, or you're very cautious as to what's going on. And that's what the difference is. Like, if I come from Salesforce or a big company and I start working at an earlier stage company.
No, that's a really interesting point. And so talking about one of those limiting beliefs, I've heard a lot of salespeople say, well, nobody knows us. We don't have brand recognition. And my reply back to that is, you know what? Your brand really doesn't even matter until it matters. And that's further down the sales pipeline. So what kind of things do you actually do in order to help people to be able to overcome that limiting belief of nobody knows us?
It's really important. First of all, I agree with you. It is there, it does exist, but it's not important. You could close deals without that. And so I would say the best way to overcome that is to build rapport with your client or prospect. The quicker you could build rapport, the quicker you build that trust with them, the more comfortable they're going to feel and be happy to move forward. And leverage the fact that you're an early stage company. You know, don't try to hide behind it. I've seen so many companies come and like try to hide the fact that they're a small company. First of all, don't go broadcast it to the world that you're a small company, but if it comes up, yeah, own it. Yes, we're a small company, but here's what that means for you. you're going to get my phone number. You're going to get the founder's phone number. So if there's any ever, any, wow, speaking too fast. If there's any issues ever, then you're going to have direct contact to us. We're going to respond really quickly. You're going to have a very strong say in the way that our product gets developed, because you're going to tell us what's working. You're going to tell us what you need, and we're going to listen to you, versus if you're going to go with our competitor A, you know, you're just one of the numbers. And we know, we've heard from other companies that, you know, sometimes you could wait 2-3 weeks before you get a response from their support team. This is a mission critical tool for you. That's not going to be good for you.
Well, so I guess you would say there's always a way forward. You used to have to be more intentional. And from what I'm also hearing too, and is preparing for those types of situations so that you're confident in your response.
Yes, absolutely. You should be creating kill cards. And what this is okay, who are your top competitors? What are their weaknesses, and not marketing weaknesses? I mean, this is kind of hard to explain without going into depth, but you don't want to put marketing or what features you have or feature comparison. That's not the point. You want to go, what is their weaknesses? What have you heard from the market? Have you heard that their response rate for customer support tickets is 2 weeks? You know, that's an important thing. What are their strengths? And that's also important for you to know. And how do you address that, overcome their strength over you? And once you have these two lists and you really actually understand the competition, then you're much better. You're going to be much better off when you go in front of the prospect to speak with them and address those issues.
Okay, so you mentioned something about the third one, and we're kind of rolling into that. So let's roll into
the third one is like, it kind of branches into A and B, but A being the one I said, hiring the wrong kind of salesperson based off their experience, but B would be listening to the wrong people for advice. Now, I say that, but, and I'm here giving you guys advice, but but I may not, and a lot of times I will not be the person that's able to help you or the best suited to help you. Let's say you're selling a product that is $50 a month, $100 a month. Don't listen to me. Majority of the time, you may be able to get some tips here and there, but I do not know your sales process. I've not been there. So understand who, the problem is you need to understand who you're listening to and what their vision is, what their, you know, everybody has filters and how they see the world, and that's based off their experience. So what is their experience? What are their filters that they're looking and giving you advice through?
So, you know, as you call it filters, I mean, for me, what I oftentimes see, having exposure into emotional intelligence, and I became a certified practitioner in emotional intelligence because I needed help. We study what we need the most, right? One of the skills that I find is most lacking in this, and we've been kind of talking about this, is what is called perspective taking. I mean, to me, I think we have to become masters, especially when we start looking at the complexities, the volatility, the ambiguity and uncertainties of the marketplace, that we have to put in and build, you know, the methods and practices in order to increase, you know, our skills and perspective taking. And that's all of what we've been really talking about. It's, hey, I need to get the perspective of, you know, the sales process. You know, I need to get the perspective of, you know, our prospects. I need to get the perspective of our competitors. I need to continually be gaining those perspectives in order for me to be more effective with that opportunity of getting the conversation, that opportunity of what I do during the first sales call, of what I do during a demo process. And I think that's critically important when we start, you know, looking at moving people through the buyer's journey. Okay, so if I start talking about all this perspective that I've gained, and I referred to putting those things together, tell us a little bit about, you know, getting that conversation. How do I use all of that to do that?
Before I jump into that, there's a good book called Everybody Sells and I can't remember the author name. It's not a sales book, actually, but it's really interesting. And he talks about getting that perspective and the empathy and understanding the buyer. And a really good exercise is to, and I've used this in training with my teams before, is pretend that you're 200 years back. Explain to somebody what a pen is. And, you know, something so simple, but you have to remember you're 200 years back. How do you, what do they know at that time? And how can you explain what something is when, you know, we're not even going complex as to even what a phone is. So that's really tough, and it really makes people slow down and put themselves in the other person's shoe to understand what it is that they know. But getting messages, getting meetings with prospects, or getting their ears. How do you do it? That's the question.
So how do I take all of this information that I've gathered, all this perspective taking, and be more effective at getting that conversation?
Okay. That's a good question. Because now that we've kind of covered, you know, understanding the buyer and actually understanding the pain that they have, now you could actually go out there and get the conversations. And you do that with whatever channel of outreach you're going to do, whether it's phone calls, emails, LinkedIn. They all work. No matter what anybody tells you, they all work, by the way. There's always fads that come and go, but they're always working. But you take what you've learned and you put your messaging in that way. Don't go out there with marketing content about features and functionality. Go out there about, hey, we solve this problem. I help founders of early stage companies create sales processes to get over $5 million in revenue. You know, that's something that's really unique. That's something that grabs the attention of your buyer, if you're a founder. But when you have your messaging keyed in and narrowed down to their problem and their pains, now you're going to get their attention.
So I get their attention, and I'm using, as you basically said, you know, a multi-pronged approach. But then, okay, I get their attention and I get the opportunity to have some time with them. What do I actually do during that first, you know, interaction and conversation?
So during the first interaction, the first, either regardless if it's face-to-face or Zoom call, you really want to, it's called qualification. You want to qualify them. But what does that mean? You know, the old fashioned qualification is BANT, B-A-N-T, budget, authority, need, and timing. I would say that's BS. I mean, it doesn't really work. Yes, obviously you want to make sure they have a budget, but most of the time we're working with unbudgeted items nowadays, and companies don't work that way. Authority, nobody really has authority now. Anyways, even if you're talking to the CEO, most of the time they're not going to have the authority. They're going to need to go speak to the board, or they're going to need to speak to other people. It needs to be a unified decision. And same with the rest. So when you qualify people, what you want to understand is, what is their pain? What problems are they having? And so I have a formula for the first phone call. And it's, imagine, you know, like the Audi logo that's circles. You have five circles. The first circle when you get onto a phone call is, you know, the 1 or 2 minutes small talk. You have to build that rapport, as I said before. The second one is you jump into qualifying them, asking them open-ended questions without you making assumptions. Even if you know 99% or 100% they have this issue, you want to ask them and have them tell you. Because if they're telling you their problem, it's way better than you come and say, hey, I know you are experiencing X and Y. So, and a good way to make that transition from there to the small talk to beginning to qualify is like, hey guys, before we begin, I wanted to ask you a quick question. And then jump into that open-ended question and go 4 or 5 layers deep, so that you could really understand their pain. And what that's doing is it puts them at ease, because, hey, we haven't started yet. They know it's a sales call. And what happens when you're on a sales call? You put your guards up. I don't want to be sold. I'm trying to hide the information so that if I negotiate later. So when you put their guard down, hey, before we begin, we're not starting yet. And that's really important. That's really, really crucial to allow them to open up. And so you get into that layer and then you transition to the third step. After you've gone a few layers deep, you don't want to go too much because you don't want it to feel like interrogation. So you say, great, thank you for explaining that to me. That was very helpful. Let me take a step back and tell you guys what we do. We help who, what, result. And that's a really easy formula. You could play with that. We help who, what, result. You could put that in any order you want. We help result, who, and what. Like, you could put those three in any way. The what is the least important. It's only there to give context into what you do so that the result makes sense. The who is so that the listener is listening to it and is like, wow, that's me. You want them to find themselves in your messaging. And the result is the one thing that this audience wants. What is the one thing that they want that is the most painful for them that you solve? So that's one sentence. So this is the third stage in the discovery call, is what I call it, the disco call, is we help who, what, result. Now, what's really fun here is you start to play with it. Have you heard of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's great. And if you're going into sales, even if you're not going to be a salesperson, go and study it. It's a fascinating topic. But what's really nice here, and you could play with this, is you, after you say that, you pause just enough for it to resonate with them, with the audience, and then you immediately move on. Because you want them to like understand that and connect with it, but then you don't want them to ask questions because you're not ready for them to ask the questions. So then you jump back and say, hey, by the way, and now what the fourth part is to qualify deeper. So now what you do is you tie it back to the third step, and that's saying, hey, by the way, you mentioned before this is a problem. Can you explain why, or you know, whatever? You wrap it back up and you keep going in the qualification. And then after you go another couple layers deep on that, now is the fun time, and you switch the direction that you're going. Now you finish that part and you go on to the fifth circle, and that is, okay, guys, thanks for this information. This really helps me understand where you guys are at and what you guys are experiencing. Let me take a step back and ask you, do you have any questions for me? And now what that allows them to do, and what allows the whole experience to do, is now they are coming towards you, asking you about your solution. Instead of you being the pushy salesperson and explaining what you guys do and it being kind of boring, they're now coming to you and saying, hey, how do you do that? Before, you said you help get to 5 million revenue. How is it that you do that? And now they're much more interested. Now, you want to quickly answer it. You don't want to go into depth because that's for a later stage. But you don't want to ignore anybody's questions either, because nobody likes it to be ignored. So you answer it on a high level and say, you know, that's a really good question. This is how we do it. I think the best thing to do is that we jump on another call and where I could explain it in depth and show you guys how we do this. And that's the final stage of the disco call, is the next steps. So it allows you to transition very quickly. And so if you've done it right, you found out their problem, and it's really painful for them because now they are the ones that were explaining it to you. And then you come in and like tease them. This is how we help people like you with that kind of problem. And this is the results we get. Now they're going to be so interested, and you come off as the professional because you were asking the right questions. Now it moves along. Now they're going to come in and book another meeting with you and do demo, quote unquote demo. And that's really good to slow down the sales process. I know a lot of people talk about speeding up the sales process and shortening the sales cycle length, but at the same time, you want commitment from the buyers along the way. And this is kind of one of those micro commitments. Let's spend another half an hour together. This whole thing should take about 15 to 20 minutes once you are really good at it. And then you move in and say, okay, let's do another half an hour. And by the way, who else can you bring on? Who else needs to be involved in this process? And now you're getting more buyers in as well, which is really important.
Well, you know, as you're talking, I'm starting to think about the whole monetary impact of the problem. And, you know, we're talking about pain, which is all emotional. We're talking about solving a problem, which is all, you know, oftentimes very emotional. Where does the whole monetary impact fit in, in regards to, well, this particular issue and things like that? I mean, how does that actually get woven into this?
Well, that could be some of the pain that you go into. I always look at, there's three types of pain. There's emotional, there's financial, and then there's like a business need. Hey, we need to have a computer in order to do business. Well, that's going to be an easy sell. But the most companies fall into emotional or financial. And it really depends on who you're speaking to. If you're speaking to a founder or CEO, CFO, typically they like to stay on the financial thing. And financial, by the way, is also time, because, you know, the phrase time is money. So depending on who you're speaking to is going to depend on where you focus on the emotional or the financial. But that's one of the pains. That's a really good point. You discuss that. Oh, okay, you're experiencing this problem. If you don't solve this, what does that mean? Oh, you're going to lose clients. Okay, how many clients would you lose if you don't solve this? Oh, what's a client worth to you? Oh, okay. So 5 clients, each one worth $250,000. Okay. So you're going to lose $1.25 million next year if you don't solve this. Okay. Now you've put that dollar sign and then you're just like, okay, this is kind of a bonus point. If you could take that and say, okay, what are you doing to solve that now?
The other thing I'm hearing you basically say is that we have to be very mindful of the fact that no person that we're actually going to be interacted with doesn't want two things to happen. They don't want to be sold and they don't want to be told. What we're doing is we're helping them to draw conclusions. Would that be fair to say?
We're helping them to draw conclusions. Yes, absolutely. It's fair to say. But I think in addition to that is we're helping them express what's already in the back of their mind. They may not be conscious of these feelings as well. You know, most people aren't connected with their emotions. Most people aren't aware of that. And what you're doing here is kind of being a good therapist and just asking them the right open-ended question for them to kind of spill their guts in a good way, not in a bad way. You should use this, you know, with good intentions. And I think any salesperson, the whole point is not to go and sell, like as you said. The whole point is this is a partnership. I'm going to help you solve your problem. You're going to help me solve my problem. My problem is I need more money in the bank so I can grow my business. Your problem is X. We're going to solve that for you. That's a good partnership.
Okay, so now we've been able to gather market intelligence. You know, we're using it effectively in order to be able to get, you know, the conversation. We have the disco call and have that first call, but then we move into the demo. All right. So, how do I, you know, implement some of the things that are going to help me to be more successful on that demo call?
Yeah. So a demo call, most people will jump in and do an hour long demo. If it takes you an hour long demo, you've lost already. Your demo, maybe 5 minutes. Now, the call itself will be half an hour or something, but really should happen is, again, small talk. And then what you want to do is reiterate the pain that was brought up before. And so let's say you were talking with one person and now they brought in two additional people. So you say, hey, before I begin, John, last time we spoke, you mentioned that this A, B, and C were an issue for you. Did I understand that correctly? Great. Now you've kind of reestablished where we're at. And now you could kind of dive in and you want to start qualifying the other people that are there as well. And so you want to start asking the other people, hey, John, Frank or Sarah, does this also affect you? If it doesn't, how does it affect you? And you want to dive into what's going on those fronts.
Okay, so 5 minutes, you're saying, as far as the demo is concerned, and basically what you're talking about is, you know, the product piece, all right? So we don't spend a whole lot of time in the product piece, but at some point you will. I don't think you're necessarily saying that this is where it stops, but this is kind of like the stone, you know, where I think for me, it's that I need to slow down the process in order to accelerate the path to sell or a sale.
Yeah, slow down. For sure. And I just got distracted. My son came in. The joy of working from home. But absolutely what you're saying is correct. When you slow down that process and you get to know your clients and get them all involved, this is how you get involvement from all the different buyers, understanding all of their different pains. Once you've done that, it's just like, great. Now I'm going to show you guys the platform, what we could do for you. And what you want to do is when you actually get into that 5 minute demo part that I mentioned is now you show the platform. You don't go list feature by feature, which most people do is they go feature by feature. What you want to do is tell a story, and you want to tell a story about them, about how they would use it. Hey, you guys mentioned that you're having trouble doing X. Great. Here's how I would solve it. I'm going to log in. I'm going to do this. I'm going to click over here. I'm going to fill in this information. Boom. Here's how X is solved. It's that easy. And maybe they had another pain, a big pain. So they have two big pains. You highlight those two big pains. If they don't, but you have an aha moment, then you could also say that in addition. So after you show them how you solve your pain, say, by the way, there's also this really cool thing that this will do X, which will save you another like 5 hours a week. And that just gets them really excited. Then you show that as well. But basically, if you notice, you're showing one to two, maybe at most three different parts of the system. You don't go through everything. They don't care how you reset the password. They don't care how you add users. Nobody cares about that. Like, obviously, yes, you need to have that, but they care about how they solve it. And the less information you give them, the more excited they'll be, the more they're going to retain, and the less possible objections could come up, which is another key thing.
Well, that goes back to that whole, they're drawing conclusions based off of the high level components and elements. They don't care about the administrative detail stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But if you go into that, they're going to say, oh, well, you don't have integration with Google and I have to log in with my name and password itself, we can't move forward. That's a stupid objection. But if you've covered that brought it up. And so now you're stuck having to fight that.
That's a very good point. Okay. A lot of great insight and common mistakes that founders make. And you mentioned that there are several, but we hit some core component ones that often find themselves at the top. So Adam, great insight shared. How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
LinkedIn is the best. I'm on LinkedIn. You can reach me out to me there at Adam Springer, or you can go to my website, startupsales.io.
Adam Springer, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.